विशेष बुधे विवरं मनक्षा पश्यामयानो व्यरहार धोन्यात् खा ईश्वरस्तात्र कमिष्यतत्त्वं तथापि राजन् करवाम किंते. My dear king, if you still think that you are the king and that I am your servant, you should order me, and I should follow your order. I can then say that this differentiation is temporary, and it expands only from usage or convention. I do not see any other cause. In that case, who is the master and who is the servant? Everyone is being forced by the laws of material nature. Therefore, no one is master and no one is servant. Nonetheless, if you think that you are the master and that I am the servant, I shall accept this. Please, order me. What can I do for you? My dear king, you have said, "You rascal, you dull, crazy fellow, I am going to chastise you, and then you will come to your senses." In this regard, let me say that although I live like a dull, deaf, and dumb man, I am actually a self-realized person. What will you gain by punishing me? If your calculation is true and I am a madman, then your punishment will be like beating a dead horse. There will be no effect. When a madman is punished, he is not cured of his madness. My dear king, you have unnecessarily accused me of being dead, though alive. In this regard, I can only say that this is the case everywhere, because everything material has its beginning and end. As far as your thinking that you are the king and master and are thus trying to order me, this is also correct, because these positions are temporary. Today you are king and I am your servant, but tomorrow the position may be changed and you may be my servant and I your master. These temporary circumstances are created by Providence, purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The bodily conception is the basic principle of suffering in the material existence. In Kali Yuga especially, people are uneducated that they cannot even understand that the body is changing at every moment, that the ultimate change is called death. In this life, one may be a king, and in the next life, one may be a dog, according to karma. The spirit soul is in a deep slumber caused by the force of material nature. He is put in one type of condition and again changed into another type. Without self-realization and knowledge, conditional life continues, and one falsely claims himself a king, a servant, a cat, or a dog. These are simply different transformations brought about by the supreme arrangement. One should not be misled by such temporary bodily conceptions. Actually, no one is master within this world, for everyone is under the control of material nature, which is under the control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is the ultimate master. As explained in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Ekale Ishwara Krishna Arasabha Bhritya, the only master is Krishna, and everyone else is servant. Forgetfulness of our relationship with the Supreme Lord brings about our suffering in the material world. Om Agyan Timidandasya Gyananjana Chalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmoy Sri Gurupe Namaha Bancha Kalpata Rubyas Chakripa Sindhubya Bebucha Patithanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nithananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Srivashadi Gaudu Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. We are reading this morning from Canto 5, Chapter 10 of Srimad Bhagavatam. Herein we find Jad Bharat instructing the great king Rahugana. Maharaj Rahugana, extremely learned, with the highest form of education in the material sense, plus being king, he was tremendously wealthy. He had great, great power and influence, literally millions upon millions of subjects and servants. Such a high birth. He was handsome, strong, beautiful. Everything a man could want in this material world, Maharaj Rahugana had it. So it is explained that one day he was on an excursion. And he had his servants carrying him on a palanquin, beautifully decorated, wonderful palanquin. And they were carrying him, and for his enjoyment, people were singing. He was being fanned with a chamara fan for a cooling effect. It was a very pleasurable ride. Everybody else walked while he was sitting in his beautifully, lushly cushioned vehicle. But we find that however much we try to improve our situations in this world for happiness, we are destined for frustration, whoever we are. Krishna says in Gita, Dukhalayam Ashashvatam, that every situation in this world is temporary, and therefore misery is imminent in any situation of life. So we may say that this king had it made. No one could conquer him, no one could defeat him, and everyone loved him. But however great or small we are not the master, we are not controller. Things must come about in our life that we cannot control. So Maharaj Rahugana, one of his very big and strong palanquin carriers, somehow or other He was not capable of carrying it. Some sickness or some injury took place. So the palanquin stopped. He couldn't go anywhere. Now, if he was just like everyone else, he would have been content simply to walk. But the more you have, the more you become attached to having, and the more it's intolerable not to have it. Therefore, simplicity is a great virtue which creates peace in this world. We think we need something. When we have elaborate arrangements, we become attached to it. And when we don't have it, it's practically worse than death. There's great anxiety. Here at the Rainbow Gathering, what do we have? We are sleeping on the ground, living in some teepee or some tent. We are happy. There's no electricity. There's no nothing except what God naturally gives the animals and the insects in the forest. We don't have much more than that. But we're peaceful. But people living in their big, big apartment complexes, if the electricity goes off, they're in complete anxiety. They can't live without it. If their water heater goes off, they're frustrated. If their television or their record players do not work, they can find no peace until someone can somehow or other fix it. If the supermarkets are closed, they're in great anxiety. Where will I eat? In this way, the more artificial necessities we have, the more we become attached to them, and the more likelihood there is to be frustrated or anxiety when they do not go our way. The only happy life is a simple life, where whatever God provides, we gratefully accept it. And whatever he does not provide, we have no attachment. We have no concern. It is not meant for us. This state of consciousness is the threshold for peace. So here we find Maharaj Rahuguna. He's in terrible anxiety because now his palanquin is stuck. Compared to modern times, when one of the palanquin holders becomes sick and cannot any longer carry, it's like having a flat tire. Even if you're driving a Lincoln Continental, a Rolls Royce, or a Mercedes Benz, if you have a flat tire, what good is all your luxurious show of transportation? It's useless. We have seen somebody has flat tire in a Mercedes Benz, and someone with a 1958 Volkswagen is driving nicely right by them. Who's happier? So what is the use of all these big, big arrangements? Jad Bharat. Jad Bharat, tomorrow we will tell the story of him. Or perhaps tonight. But anyway, he was a very, very simple man. In fact, he was living in the jungle. He was actually born in a very, very high-caste Brahmin family. But he pretended to be totally uneducated and foolish. He pretended to be ignorant just so that nobody would praise him, just so that no one would give him any facilities, because he knew if he had facilities or praise, that's the door to fall down. So he was simply dirty. He let his hair grow long. He forgot about taking bath. Never cut his nails. And he just lived in the jungle. He wouldn't say anything to anyone. He took a vow of silence. And he would act in such a way that people really thought he was crazy. And they would throw things at him. At one time, his own brothers, they thought he was such a madman that they thought, what are we going to do with him? What utility does this fool have in our household? We have to figure out some way he can help us. So they had an agricultural field where they were growing corn. So they thought, let us make him scarecrow. So they just took him out there and said, Jad Bharat, you just stand here. And he just stood there for days. Didn't care if they fed him, didn't care about sleeping, he just stood there. To scare the crows away. But he was such a nice person, the crows actually liked him. Because he was so harmless, he was so unassuming. He was so pure at heart. Anyways, ultimately, they cast him away. They kicked him away from the home, and he was living in the jungles. So here we find the king, Rubhugna. He has palaces, he has armies, he has beautiful palanquins, he has millions of servants. And we have Jad Bharat, who is completely seen by society. People used to throw a stool and pass urine on him because they thought he was such a crazy man. They would spit on him, ridicule him. He was really a rainbow in the truest sense. Original. The original rainbow. And people didn't understand his virtues. So, Maharaj Rubhugna, he's sitting there. We have to find a spare tire. You have to find somebody who could carry this palanquin. And it's not an easy thing. It was a big, heavy, beautiful, decorated palanquin. So they went looking through the forest to see what they could find. And there they found Jad Bharat. He had very good, strong build. Ah, they said, you, everyone is the servant of the king. You come and you carry this palanquin. He just was looking at them like he couldn't understand anything. So they just dragged him physically and put him under the palanquin and said, now you carry. So he put it on his shoulder and they began to carry. Four sides, four men. And everything was going very nicely. The king was very happy. Ah, now I am, with such royalty, I am proceeding toward my destination. But then, beyond his control, an ant began to cross the road. And when Jad Bharat saw this ant was about to come under his foot, he stopped to protect the ant. But you know, what do they call it? The law of centrifugal force. When three people are going quickly one way and one person stops, the palanquin became, it was a great jolt. And the king was very uncomfortable. What's happening? What is this happening? I'll kill all of you palanquin holders. What are you doing? Why you are causing me this discomfort? They said, it's not us, it's him. This crazy man we found in the forest. Rahugana Maharaj said, huh? He said, you keep every foot in step with everyone else. Otherwise, I will punish you. Now you proceed. So they began to proceed. But by the will of Providence, a group of ants were on the road. So Jad Bharat stopped. Again, the palanquin, the king was moving, very uncomfortable. He threatened Jad Bharat. He started screaming at him, if you do this again, I will kill you. I will take your head. Now you proceed. So they began to walk. And again, some nice little ants were crawling. So Jad Bharat stopped to let the ants pass. Like what we pedestrian crossing. He saw each ant to have as much value as himself. It's the nature of egoistic thinking that we think we're the best, we are superior to others. Or we think our race is superior to others, or our religion is superior to others. Or our color of skin is superior to others. Or our sex is superior to others. Even our species, we think we are superior to others. This is illusion. This is due to ignorance. Today in this country of America, there are tens, hundreds, and millions of innocent animals being slaughtered every year simply because we like to drink their blood and eat their flesh. And those animals love their life as much as you do, and they'll fight for their life as much as you will, and they'll care for their children as much as your mother cared for you. Cows, chickens, fish, goats, sheep. These are life-living creatures. These are the children of God. What right do we think that we can murder them and torture them? We think because we are human species, we are superior to them. Therefore, we have a right to exploit them, torture them, and kill them. If it gives us some temporary pleasure. This is a horrendous type of false ego. I am superior. But throughout history, we find this false ego plaguing relationships between God's children. You know, earlier in this country, just a couple hundred years ago, the Christian ministers used to preach that women had no souls. Therefore, they can be abused. Of course, by God's grace, somehow or other, we have risen above this kind of ignorance. But now they are saying that animals have no souls. Whoever you want to abuse or exploit, you just create a philosophy that they have no souls. Just to prove to yourself that I am superior. Or my race is superior. Or my religion is superior. There is so much exploitation, violence, and death on the basis of this ego. But Judd Barak was a self-realized soul. He understood that these ants have every much the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness as me. And they are my brothers, and I have no right to inflict pain upon them. As far as Judd Barak was concerned, the ant was as important as the king on that palanquin. Better to save that ant from death, even if it means the king having a few seconds of inconvenience. But the king didn't see it that way, because he was thinking, I am a king, and you are the servant. So at this time, he was raging mad. He said, you are dull, you are ignorant, you are a fool, you should be killed. Judd Barak simply, very humbly, just listened. And then he began to speak. He said, my dear king, you can say what you like. Now you would think that you are the king, and I am your servant. But these are all temporary designations. We are not this body. This body is always changing. At one time, we were little children. And our parents were saying, you do like this. And now we're parents, and we're telling our children, you do like this. There's something called the laws of action and reaction, the laws of karma. In modern terminology, it means what goes around comes around. Where for every action, there is an equal reaction. If a parent abuse, if a child causes tremendous anxiety to the parent, then there's a good chance that that parent's going to get a nice child that's going to cause great anxiety to them. In fact, that was one of the reasons I chose to become a sannyasi. Sannyasi means you do not marry, you be celibate, and all these things. I was thinking that I caused so much grief to my parents. If I were to marry and have children, my God, will I ever suffer. For better like this. Anyways, Judd Barak was speaking to Maharaj Rahugana that these bodily designations are temporary. They are always changing. Today you are king, and I am your servant. But in the next birth, I may be the king, and you may be the servant. So what is the reality? The reality is that we are all eternal souls. We are all part of God. And to deal with one another on that level is truth. To simply deal with one another on the basis of these temporary designations is an illusion. It is false. Maharaj Rahugana tells, is being told by Judd Barak, that my dear king, you are going out and you are conquering so many enemies. Being a king means you need tremendous armies to protect the kingdom from your enemies. And of course, you know, today being a politician, you have enemies who are of your own nation, who are simply trying to take your position. The bigger position you have in this world, the more enemies you have. And yet, people are so crazy that they're doing
anything working, striving so hard just for such a position. According to the Shastra, according to the laws of karma, the president or the king or the monarch of a state has to accept one-fifth of the karma of the entire kingdom or nation, because he's responsible. Now, you know what kind of karma is here in the United States of America? All the animal slaughter, all the illicit activities that are going on, all the crime, all the violence, all the cheating, all the lying, all the pollution of the earth and the sky and the water. And whoever sits in that White House has to accept one-fifth of all the karma upon his own head. And yet, they're spending millions upon millions of dollars fighting, beg, borrow, steal, or kill to get that seat. If they knew the truth of the responsibility they have, they would be doing campaigns for the person running against them. But they don't know. They have no understanding of the subtle laws of nature. The politicians would be very humble. They would be very humble. Actually, he's better than me. He's actually very nice. He's done so many wonderful things. Actually, I'm the lowest. When you understand truth, you become humble. When you're obsessed with illusion, you become very proud. You try to acquire more and more and more. Maharaj Rahugana said, "Now that you are king, you have so many enemies. But that is your illusion. You only have one enemy. And that enemy, my dear king, is your own mind. There's no one else your enemy in all of creation. Because it is this uncontrolled mind of yours that is identifying yourself that I am king. I am this body. I am a man. I am of this nationality. And due to that misconception, see how you're suffering. You have your big, wonderful palanquin and all your servants and all of your loving associates and all your wealth and all your opulence, and you're so suffering and miserable that you're screaming at me, you're yelling at me, you're having all kinds of fits, you're threatening to kill me. What is the use of all your royalty, all your luxuries? You're in anxiety. You're miserable. And me? I have nothing. I don't even have clothes. Judd Bharat did not wear clothes. He just forgot he was this body. He wasn't going naked out of some fashion to prove a point. He simply was so completely immersed in his eternal soul that he just had no cognitions that he was living in this body. That's another platform of consciousness. He says, "What do I have? Nothing. And I'm peaceful. I'm happy because I've controlled my mind. Because my mind is fixed in the self, in the truth, in God. And you have everything else in the world, but because of your uncontrolled mind, you are miserable and frustrated. Therefore, your only enemy, my dear king, is your own mind. And if you learn to control your mind becomes your best friend." He began to speak incredibly elaborate philosophy in this matter. What is matter? What is spirit? What is truth? Who is God? And when the king heard this,
he became so overwhelmed that he came down from his chariot. He came down from his palanquin right in front of everybody. And he laid his body on the ground and put his head at the feet of this wild man of the forest, Jagbharat. And he surrendered. He begged forgiveness. That out of great illusion, I have been so intoxicated by my material conditions of life, I have spoken these harsh words to you. But by your kindness, by your grace, you have enlightened me. Now I want to be your disciple. And Jagbharat instructed him on the goal of life and how to achieve it by always remembering God, by always aspiring to associate with holy people, by living in a mood of service and by chanting God's name. And after instructing him in this way, the king offered Jagbharat to be the guru for the whole kingdom. Such a position. After Jagbharat spoke this eloquent philosophy, he just shrugged his head and resumed his position as a totally ignorant, dumb, deaf, useless person. And he walked back into the jungles to live the rest of his life. This beautiful story from the Srimad Bhagavatam illustrates so many of the most essential principles that men and women are meant to live by in this world. Human life is meant for self-realization. Human life is not meant simply for the purpose of trying to create comfortable situations for this body. The more we succeed, the more we'll be in anxiety when it goes against us. And it will. So following in the footsteps of Jagbharat, of course we cannot imitate him because we do not have his realizations. But following his footsteps, here we are in the jungles of Alabama at the Rainbow Gathering. Let us utilize our time to elevate our consciousness, to free ourselves from these egoistic designations that plague the world. And let us learn to see the beauty of God everywhere and in everything, and be a servant of that beauty in everything we do, everything we say, and everything we think. Thank you very much. Is there any questions? Yes?
It's a twofold question. One is, when you're mentioning the part of the story of Jagbharat, recognizing the importance of the ant as being just as valid as the king's position, and therefore, we should always offer respect and be careful not to harm or interfere with another living entity's, you know, pursuit of happiness. So if a mosquito lands on my arm and he wants to have lunch on my blood, should I say, oh yes, this is very nice, let him have lunch and like that, or should I interfere with his pursuit of happiness?
There are two proper ways you can deal with this mosquito. One is, yes, my body is meant for others, so let him drink to his full satisfaction or her full satisfaction.
Only her.
Huh? Only females drink blood? I'm not so expert at these mosquito subject matters. Anyways, if she comes to drink your blood, you can say, yes, this is wonderful. God is allowing me to serve this mosquito by sacrificing my own blood. And if you think in those terms that I am serving one of God's children, then that is a wonderful thing. But you can also think, especially in places like India and other countries, most of these ladies have malaria. So, if they bite you, you may be dead. Or you may be very much sick for a long time with high fevers. In which case, you also have a right to defend yourself. If that mosquito is coming to drink your blood, you can also think that she is coming to attack me with a deadly weapon, and I have a right to defend myself. If you're thinking this body is meant for God's service, and this mosquito is coming to attack, to create tremendous inconvenience, perhaps disease, then you have a right to defend your body, just as you have a right to defend it against human beings who try to come to harm you. So that is proper consciousness. But it is also proper to just give the blood and say, Haribo. You become purified. But if your consciousness is thinking in terms of how I could best serve God, then either way is all right.
The other part of my question was that So some people say, well, you guys kill plants, I kill animals. We both have to kill to survive.
So then I can kill you also, my dear sir. You know, in some places, human flesh is considered a great delicacy. So if you taste good, then I can kill you. What will he say? If you kill his dog, what will he say? This is all nonsense. But yes, most grains and vegetables and fruits, we do not even kill. You don't kill to eat fruit. You just take from the tree. The tree is living, supplying so much. In the grain, in the fields, they cut the grains. They don't kill the grains. So practically all is not killed. But sometimes there is. But that particular species is in such a low state of conscious evolution that species does not have much consciousness or feelings. There is some, no doubt. Because the brain, the nervous system, and everything else is so lowly developed that it's minimal violence. But the animals, they are as developed in every way as us, save and except intelligence. They will experience pain, and they will fight for their life as much as you will. So therefore you have no right to cause that unnecessary violence and pain to others. And when you take vegetable or fruit or grain and you offer it to God, then whatever karma is there is removed. Becomes prasad, Krishna's grace. But God will not accept, Krishna will not accept food that is a product of violence, pain, and bloodshed. Yes.
Does for us, he chose to be silent and hear one of the reasons that he gave for the mission of God is so he would avoid unnecessary social interaction. So the question is, social interaction that goes on between human beings can be very complex and very sometimes disturbing, sometimes rewarding, depending on one's ability to function within certain roles. My question is, what is the proper way to be in a society for something? Everyone's expecting so much everyone's expecting something from each person. So how to satisfy so many people's demands for performance and for friendship, conversation. I understand why it's said, Rod.
But when the time was right, he came right into the society and preached very nicely the truth. We cannot be attached. We cannot be attached to pleasing everyone. We simply have to be attached to performing our service the best we can, to live for the truth. We must try, by whatever means we can, to be a compassionate brother, sister, servant of all living beings. And with spiritual direction, we must learn that real service is for the body, the mind, and the soul. We must be the servant of the body, the mind, and the soul of all living beings. And we must aspire in this way. But you should know that if you try to be compassionate to the soul of another, then those who are too much materialistic will take that as a great threat. Just like we find throughout all the great religions of the world, some of the greatest saints, they totally disappointed and broke the hearts of their own parents. There's the story of Shankaracharya. He was only 8 years old, and his mother was a widow. And he left her and broke her heart. But in the process, billions of people have become enlightened by his influence in the world. Madhvacharya was 12 years old when he took sannyas, became a swami. And his father was completely against it. He was outraged and totally brokenhearted. In the Christian religion, we read about St. Francis. When he decided to be a monk, his father was a wealthy, wealthy businessman. He was totally outraged. He locked his son in a closet so he couldn't get out of the home. But somehow, he convinced his mother to let him go, and he escaped, and his father practically never talked to him again for the rest of his life. But yet, if he didn't do that, How many people of the world would have been deprived of his compassion, of his love of God? So therefore, you should know that whatever you do, some people will be pleased and some people will be displeased. And if you try to live a totally material life, then all the spiritual people will be very displeased and pained to see it. And if you try to live a very spiritual life, many, many, many of even your closest materialistic associates will think you're crazy. They'll think you're offending them. Your friends will say, "What are you doing? Why don't you come and do all our nonsense with us?" They'll be very angry. So therefore, we cannot be attached to what everyone thinks. We have to be attached to what's good. We have to be attached to the truth. We must be attached to living as an instrument of God in this world. We must live according to the truth. We must stand up for the truth. And we must follow our heart. But do it as a servant to all living beings. Some will accept you, some will reject you. Some will love you, some will hate you. That you cannot change. It is the nature of this world. Just like here at the Rainbow Gathering, amongst each other, we just love each other very much. But the forest rangers, they may not think like us. And the neighboring town of Alabama, they may look at us like complete, useless, crazy hippies. So in order to please the family amongst us, we're simultaneously displeasing so many others. What can you do? It is the nature of this world. Simply, we must understand what is the truth, what is right, and we must live by it. And we must be compassionate to try to help everyone come closer to that truth. We should not be afraid to mix in society. If we're afraid, that means we're attached. We're attached to what people think of us. We're attached to the results. If you're detached, you can go right in and mix in and speak the truth and do what you know it is right. Be an instrument of God.
But in order to do that, don't you have to be spiritually strong?
Yes, you must be spiritually strong.
So sometimes you have to be in a sheltered atmosphere to develop before you can...
That you need spiritual guidance by which you could learn how to become spiritually strong. Because unless you are spiritually strong, you can really do very little to help others become spiritually uplifted. Between the turtle and the rabbit. The rabbit went very fast, and the turtle went very slow. But the rabbit went so fast that it just became so tired, it fell down and went to sleep. And the turtle, not so fast, but just kept going forward without deviation. So we must move forward. But we should do it step by step, carefully. But in the name of going step by step carefully, you have to move forward. We can't just sit there and think, well, I'll just continue everything I'm doing and someday I will become God realized. You have to, every step you take is a risk to your material life. Every step you take toward God, you're detaching yourself that much from the things you're leaving behind. Gradual, yes, but it has to be progressive. I have seen some people 20 years later, they're doing the same things, saying it's a gradual process. So gradual. So gradual. Maybe in the next creation. So yes, we should be careful. And we should not whimsically, immaturely think we're great saints. But we have to, step by step, detach ourselves and accept a spiritual way of life.
The body and mind and soul nourishment. So it seems like some people would say, well, you guys are just totally spiritual, you're just nourishing the soul, you're sort of neglecting the body. So where's the balance? And
the balance is when you eat Krishna prasad. As people are taking prasad, you can also take prasad. Prasad is good for your soul because it's offered to God with devotion, but it's also very good for your body. And because it tastes good, it's good for your mind. Correct? Evil. And when you dance, you're glorifying God, it's good for the soul. It's blissful, so it's good for the mind. And it's also best possible exercise for your body. Huh? So now you should take prasad. Thank you very much.